Let's look at page 21, exercise 3.1. And again, it's fill in the blanks. Number one, when the same words are found in premises and conclusion, it must be determined that they do not have what sort of meanings? Equivocal or ambiguous would be acceptable too. Blank definition lists the necessary and sufficient qualifications in the definiens. What is, I'm sorry? Connotative. That's the answer. What letter is that?
L.
Okay. What is the definiens? Okay, it's the actual definition rather than the term to be defined. Again, it's a Latin word for what you would call a definition. A blank definition explicitly mentions every person, place, or thing in the class. Definiendum. What kind of definition? Yes? D. A denotative definition. Clark gives the example of a qualified voter in the text. I use the example of a resident of Vancouver. The denotative definition of qualified voter is the actual list of proper names. The denotative definition of Vancouver resident is the list of proper names, such as a telephone book. Number four, the relation between connotation and denotation is such that in many instances, if the connotation increases, the denotation, yes? C, decreases. Blank method is definition by classification based on the principle of dichotomous division. Anyone? Yes? J, the tree of Porphyry. Dichotomous division. You remember, a dichotomy is splitting something in two. Di means two. D-I. According to Blank, in defining a term, one states the genus, then adds the difference to get the species. According to Aristotle, B. Blank definitions occur in situations where you have two definitions having the same intellectual content in the definiens. I, purely verbal. They're purely verbal or semantic. Since G, ostensive, definitions consist of pointing at the object, they are not verbal. Augustine has shown that ostensive definitions are impossible. Who can tell me what book he did that in? The Teacher, De Magistro. Blank, meaning of a term, means that the term has a single meaning. Yes. K, univocal. It's the opposite of equivocal. Okay, let's turn to page, yes. Number five. Did I skip it? I'm sorry. The relation between denotation and connotation is such that in many instances, if the denotation increases, the connotation decreases. C. Okay. Okay, now you had an exercise on page 23 of arranging these terms in series of increasing connotation. That means the definition of each succeeding term becomes more complex, more restrictive than the definition of the term before it or the terms before it. That's what increasing connotation means. Now keep in mind that this will generally mean decreasing denotation, but not strictly. Clark makes that point. That tends to be the case, but it is not always the case. As the connotation increases, the list tends to grow shorter. Recall his example of qualified voters. As you keep adding restrictions, they have to live here for so long. They have to be of a certain age. They have to be registered so long before they vote. They have to own property, whatever it might be. As you keep adding connotation, then you keep decreasing the number of people, generally speaking, who meet those rules. So let's look at number one. Who would like to tackle it? Arrange it in order of increasing connotation. Which comes first?
Polygon.
Keep going.
Quadrilateral. Parallelogram. Rectangle. Square.
Does everybody see that? Polygon. Quadrilateral. Parallelogram. Rectangle. Square. There you have increasing connotation. Okay, number two. Somebody else. Go ahead.
Atheist, theist, pagan, Christian, tolerant.
What do you think about that? Go ahead. Okay, I think that's the better order. Pagan is first. Why is pagan first? Why is an atheist first? Yes.
Pagan knows no God, and atheist disbelieves in God. So he has to acknowledge Jesus and God and believe.
Okay. Can a pagan be religious?
No.
And not believe in God? A pagan can be religious and not believe in God. So a pagan is the broadest word there. The next, within pagan, there's a subcategory called atheist. That's the next broadest. These are increasing connotations. And then we have theist. And finally, or not finally, but penultimately, Christian, and then Calvinist, in order of increasing connotation. How about the next one? The next one's very interesting. Who would like to tackle that one? Yes, sir.
Made under the law, being born, suffered the wrath of God, suffered death on the cross, and was buried in the grave.
Okay, I have no problem with that except the first two. Why is made under the law of broader or lesser connotation than being born?
Because I would argue, well, because that's the definition of law, since it wasn't capitalized here, I took it to mean a broader law than the law of Moses, the law of law. So there were things that were created that are not born. Points for
you. Okay. Okay. Well, that's an interesting argument. I hadn't thought of plants. I would have structured them being born first and then made under the law, but everything else would be the same. Suffered the wrath next, suffered the death next, and then was buried and resurrected as increasing connotation. Okay, number four. Anybody want to take that? Yes, sir?
First, hear and believe and understand and preach.
Hear, then believe, then understand, then preach. Anybody have a different order? Quite a few. Yes, sir, back there.
Hear, understand, believe, and then preach. That's definitely the Western way of thinking. Deeper thought is that belief, hear, and believe, and understand.
Anybody have anything different from these two? Yes, ma'am.
I have preach, hear the gospel, understand, and believe.
That's the one I would agree with as far as increasing connotation. Would you repeat it, please?
Preach the gospel, hear the gospel, understand, believe the gospel, or believe the gospel. Understand the gospel, believe the gospel.
Yes, sir?
Don't more people hear it than people who preach it, though? I mean...
But the preaching precedes the hearing.
But that's like an order of chronology, isn't it?
Right. But more people it's preached to more than hear. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, once you become a Christian, even though you're not a preacher, you'll preach.
What's this? Once you become a Christian?
I'm saying that there are more who... in the Bible it says that you can't hear unless there's a preacher.
Okay.
Okay, so on that premise, then when you hear and believe, then all those who are converted still preach the gospel, although they may not be preachers at the office of preachers. But we're still preaching is sharing the gospel.
You're thinking of the verse, I think it's in Romans. How shall they believe unless they hear? How shall they hear unless there's a preacher? Yes, sir.
My thought here is like, I had to hear before I could believe. I had to believe before I could understand. I had to understand before I could preach.
How can you believe what you don't understand?
I didn't have to come personally. I didn't believe it has to come first. Because I believed the gospel, and then I began delving into it to find out.
It's impossible to believe what you don't understand. That would go along with the Roman Catholic doctrine of faith, of implicit faith, that we don't need to understand. We simply believe whatever the church teaches. But the Bible has quite a different idea of faith, that we understand the propositions. Of course, we understand them more fully the more we study after we believe them. But there has to be an initial understanding there, or we can't believe it. If I were to say to you, Quark est novum sacramentum. How many of you believe that? No one. You don't understand it. Paul argues that understanding comes first. It doesn't do anyone any good to hear words in any language, whether it's nonsense like I just spoke, or whether it's some foreign language or some foreign tongue. It doesn't do anyone any good. You cannot believe it if you don't know what it means. The understanding must precede the belief. Christ was persecuted because those who opposed him in some fashion understood his claims better than the disciples. They understood quite well who he claimed to be when he said, "Before Abraham was, I am." The Pharisees understood that quite well. The disciples caught on a little bit later. And some might argue that they didn't catch on fully until after the resurrection. But the unbelievers understood it quite well, and that's why they opposed him so strenuously. But to say that you can believe what you don't understand, I think, is a serious mistake. So that's why I would argue in this example here, number four, that understanding must precede believing. Yes, ma'am.
This is, you're talking, it seems to me, about a chronological activity here, but if you take it...
Well, not really, because belief, the definition of belief requires the concept of understanding. It is true, it has to be chronologically in that order too, but logically, the definition of Christian belief has to include understanding. Well, don't be misled on that. Yeah, don't be misled on that. Remember the warning that Clark gives, that this tends to hold, this inverse relationship between connotation and denotation, but it doesn't always hold. When we get to number seven, I believe Jeremy pointed this out yesterday to me, when we get to number seven, we'll see that very clearly. Because in number seven, you have two individuals, Adam and Cain. So you can't get down any lower than one in this case. But let's do number six first here, or five. Who wants to try five? Increasing connotation. Yes, sir. Number five? No. That would be the last. Now remember, it's increasing connotation. Yes, sir. Preach the gospel, hear the gospel, understand the gospel, believe the gospel. Now, those who want to argue that preach the gospel should come at the end, I can see how you would understand that because you have to hear it, believe it, understand it before you preach it, if that's the argument you wish to make. Yes, sir?
It all depends on how you start preaching, whether somebody's...
That's right. That's right. Preach is ambiguous. Exactly right. Number five, let's try that one again. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. Okay, did you get that? Sinner, immoral, moral, justified, righteous, sanctified. Anyone differ on that? Increasing connotation. Okay. Number six. This is an easier one. Increasing connotation. Where do we begin? What's number one and number six?
Book.
Okay, keep going. What's second? Okay. Okay. Now notice we don't put the New Testament after the Old Testament simply because the Old Testament has more books in it than the New Testament. It appears there because the definition of the New Testament includes some reference to the Old Testament. The definition of the Old Testament need not include a reference to the New Testament. Yes, sir?
That book is similar to the same way that I organized it, but how special could it not be the book first, then the Old Testament and the New Testament, and then the Bible on the gospel, because the Bible was not canonized. So
well, this is confusing chronology with the logic of it, and we have to be careful not to do that. Okay, number seven. This is interesting because, again, we have the names of two individuals here. Who wants to try it? Yes. Okay, creation, creature, mankind, Adam, Cain. Now, why would do you list Adam before Cain? Well, that's true. Adam was the father of Cain. Okay, you're saying then in Cain's definition you have to refer to Adam, but in Adam's definition you don't have to refer to Cain. Okay, do you see that? Okay, number eight, a longer series, at least longer words here. Anyone? Let's see a hand. Okay, back in the halfway back there. Number eight, go ahead. Almost. Anybody have anything any different? Yes, sir.
Number, real number, integer, positive integer, real number, rational and prime.
Anybody have anything else? Yes, sir.
Number, real number, rational number, integer, positive integer, prime.
That's the correct order. Now, if you haven't studied all those things in your math studies, then that may be difficult to do that. Yes? No. No. That question sort of presumes that you have some background in mathematics. Yes, sir? The order again is number, real number, rational number, integer, positive integer, prime. Okay, number nine. Let's have a hand on number nine. In increasing connotation, keep in mind the difference here between connotation and denotation. Yes, right there. Go ahead. Number nine. Okay, did everybody get that? Entity is the broadest, the least connotative. Next is living. Next is sensate. Plants are living, but they're not sensate. Rational. Not all sensate entities are rational. And then finally, speaking. Number 10. Let's have a show of hands here on number 10. Who's eager to try number 10? Yes, sir, in the black shirt.
Way, Broadway, Railway,
I don't agree. Let's see if anybody else disagrees. Now this is it. Some of these are ambiguous again, and that's where the difficulty comes in. The order I had, and I'll give this to you, and then we can feel free to disagree if you want. Number one is direction, as being the least connotative. Number two was path. Three is way. Four is broad way, and five is narrow way. And the reason I made direction first is that it doesn't specify any route. It's just a general direction as the least connotative. Now the ambiguity comes in with path and way, I suppose. And the reason I listed path first was that all that follows has the word way in it. Well, that's an interesting idea. Yes, go ahead.
I did direction last, and I put way could be any way. And then it's select way, so it's a broad way. And then there is a narrow way. And then there is and then I put on the narrow way to the path, and then the path leads to the direction of going.
Well, that's an interesting argument. And you can see how much it depends on one's understanding of the English words here. Yes?
If you consider the possible ambiguity here, then Broadway is the final destination for the place in New York.
In the back.
So where are we follow up? The direction depending on the spell forces you to include some specific direction.
Well, that's essentially the argument this lady made. That's why she chose something else first. Way as being any way rather than a specific direction. Let's go on to number 11. Who wants to try number 11? Come on, students, they're not that bad. Okay, right here.
Number 11, I've got war, battle. You know, I've got the two first
order. Don't tease us.
Okay, let's do it backwards. Conflict, opposition, battle, and war.
Now, there are five terms there. Which one of you? Altercation, you've omitted? Okay. Anybody disagree? Yes, right here. Yes, in the back.
I had opposition, conflict, opposition, and battle of war.
Almost right. Yes, sir?
I went opposition, altercation, conflict, war.
Almost right. I think the proper order, and I'll give you my argument here, is opposition as being the most general term. Conflict next. Altercation is a particular type of conflict. Conflict is not a particular type of altercation. Conflict next, then altercation. War is a more general category than battle. You define a battle by referring to a war, and so battle would appear last. So the order I came up with was opposition, conflict, altercation, war, battle, as being the most connotative, increasing connotation. Number 12. Anybody want to tackle number 12? Yes, right here. His order was neutrality, peace, agreement, cooperation, harmony. Anybody disagree? Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'm rethinking this now, but have agreement, cooperation, then I have neutrality, harmony, and peace.
Well, I have some in the same order, but not many. Yes, sir. The red shirt. I think that's a more plausible order. Yes, in the back.
I think it's about cooperation with our community. So I have neutrality, cooperation,
Well, that's an interesting observation. People can cooperate without agreeing. The order I had, I think, is slightly different from any that's been suggested here. I had neutrality first. Everyone seemed to agree on that. Then I had agreement, cooperation, harmony, and peace as being the highest level, because it requires harmony.
But I wouldn't argue that it's been exactly amongst us. Or even that we've really cooperated for a while.
No, that's a good argument. It's a good argument.
So I think peace can happen if you're afraid of the other guy. It has nothing to do with even agreement.
Mm-hmm.
You agree not to fight.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's look at 13. Anybody want to try 13? Yes, in the black shirt.
Thank you, guys. Condemn, repentant, justified, glorified.
Anybody differ? Blue shirt?
Condemn, repentant, sanctified, justified, glorified.
Almost. I would almost agree with that one. Yes, in the back. That would be the one I would agree with. Condemned, repentant, justified, sanctified, glorified. Number 14, yes, no, we're elected, but not sanctified. Sanctification is a process that happens in time. How about number 14? Abortion, killing, murder, death, dying. Yes, sir, go ahead. Anybody disagree? Yes, and we have someone back there. Why would you list abortion first? No, you've got it in decreasing connotation rather than increasing connotation. The concept of abortion assumes the concepts of murder, death, dying, killing, and not the other way around. The definition of killing does not include the definition of abortion. But the definition of abortion includes the definition of killing. Yes, in the back?
Dying, death, killing, murder, abortion.
I think that's the correct answer.
How do you find dying without the concept of death?
Not all who are dying
are dead.
That's true, but in order to define dying, you must have a concept of death to begin with. You can't describe somebody who is dying if you don't use the term death to describe them.
You can describe dying
as the process of losing the function of living. And we're not the process of
the
truest death. Denotatively, certainly, the number of those dead is fewer than the number of those who have been dying. Yes?
I agree with him, because I think she's trying to put it more in chronological order. You're dying, and then you have death.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's what she's saying.
Yeah, I think in your argument, you used the term we talked about earlier, you're begging the question, because you're using different, you disguise the term death by saying losing the function of life. So you describe the concept of death, and you must have a concept of death in order to be able to describe what dying means. Describe dying without the process.
Go ahead.
I think that's confusing the idea of definition with denotation. Because if you start with the large circle, it's being dying, not all who begin to die in this process of death.
Sure they do.
In a smaller number.
All are dying, and all will die, and all will be dead. Right?
But some people are, say, dying from cancer, and then they're healed, or, you know what I'm saying?
But again, I think we're confusing the idea. I think we're trying to say that the absolute is that denotation must decrease while connotation increases. And I don't think that holds in this case.
Go ahead.
How I approached it was I thought that there are more who are dead. For those who are just alive now on the planet, they're dying. That's a process. But over all time, there are more dead than those who are dying.
No.
Mm-hmm.
You're introducing a new
No. Anybody else have any comment on this? Which is a broader or more general connotation, dying or death? Yes, sir.
I would say that not all people that are dying will die, because some people are dying, but then they're next day when they walk out from something else.
Well, I would agree with you for a different reason. I think the category of those who are dying is larger than those who are dead. Logically, because to give you one example from Scripture, at the time of the return of Christ, all who are dying will not die. Every person in a hospital at the time Christ appears will not die. We're told that explicitly. Yes, in the back.
We are completely dying. We're at the moment and we're replacing ourselves every
10 years. Okay. Go ahead.
We have been freely substituting the word dead for the word death.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will affect the outcome.
How does it affect it? How does it affect it?
Well, my thing is death is something that happens.
Okay. Well, I don't know if we're going to get any further on this question or not. Why don't we go on to 15? Anybody want to try 15? Yes. Almost. Black shirt, please. That would be the order I would choose. Yes, Jeremy.
Can't you have Orthodox before Christian, because you can be like an Orthodox for another religion? Orthodox basically means following the rules or something.
An Orthodox
Muslim. You can be it. Yeah.
Okay, if you understand it that way, I would accept that. Okay. I would accept that. Yes, sir.
I would put Calvinists for Orthodox, because there are Calvinists who are not Orthodox.
Any other comments on that?
That presumes a further restriction on the word Orthodox, however.
Well, it comes from a Calvinist.
Yes, sir. Religious, theist, Christian, Orthodox, Calvinist. Number 25, I think that's on our 25 and 26. Definitions. Now, on page 20, there are guidelines for evaluating definitions. And on pages 25 and 26, we have some definitions that the author wants you to evaluate. Is the first one acceptable or unacceptable, and why, as a definition? Anybody out there? Okay, go ahead.
I think it's a acceptable definition, because I think it states the necessary sufficiency.
Okay, it's acceptable. It lists a broad category, rational creature, and it lists the differentia, created in the image of God, the distinguishing characteristics. Number two, a circle is a line, every point of which is equidistant from a given point. Is that acceptable or not? Okay, we have yes. And for the same reasons. Poetry is the record of the best and happiest moments of the happiest and best minds.
Whoever wrote that doesn't know how to write
a poem. Or they have a peculiar idea of happiest and best. So you would say that's unacceptable? Why? Which of the rules that the author has given us a few pages earlier does it violate? I heard it here. Go ahead. Well, number three is, anything else? It's certainly circular. Yes, sir.
It's a matter of, it can be the happiest and best of the happiest and best minds, but it can also be like the worst moments that the best.
Okay, it's too narrow. That's not a good definition of poetry. It's too vague. It's too vague. Number four, sin is any want of conformity unto or transgression of the law of God. Acceptable or unacceptable? Acceptable? Okay. Now, does anybody know where this is a quote from? Now, speak up if you know. What is sin? And where did that come from? Yes, right here. Okay, the Westminster Catechism, the shorter catechism. In fact, the catechism consists largely of definitions. It is the people who wrote it, the same people who wrote the Westminster Confession, were very insistent that terms be defined carefully and the definitions be stated in such a form that they could be easily memorized. Number five, reason means non-revelational knowledge. Yes, sir. Too broad. Anybody disagree? Anybody say it's too narrow? Guess I'm the only one. It's unacceptable. I think we can agree with that as a definition of reason. But again, if an author wants to write a book and say, this is how I'm going to use the word reason, he can get away with it. It's also ambiguous, I think. I don't think it's very clear as to what non-revelational knowledge is. None. Right. That was a violation of one of the rules. Number six, saving faith is believing what you know isn't so. What rule does it violate? One of the ones we just mentioned. Yes. Okay. It's a negative term. Number seven, miracle is a violation of a natural law. Too narrow. Okay, I would have said too broad almost on that one. Or vague, anyway. It's unacceptable. A prime number is an integer between 1 and 10, not divisible without remainder by any number except itself in unity. Unacceptable? Too narrow. We have to agree on that one. That one's too narrow. Number nine, sanctification is the work of God's free grace, whereby we are renewed in the whole man after the image of God and are enabled more and more to die unto sin and live.